You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, guys.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
Mark and Tim, for those that haven't come across you, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
My name is Mark Bondurant. I'm a partner in Pharmacy Transition Partners. My background has been I was a store manager for about 20 years. Had an opportunity to buy into Tim's family business of Clark's Pharmacy. During that time, Tim and I got up to 10 stores. We sold a few. We sold it back to 3 stores. And then in a matter of 5 years, we went from 3 stores to 16. So my job during that time was COO or operations. So pretty much most things fell under my umbrella with personnel management, budget management, making sure that our workflow was good. So then a few years ago, we sold off again some of the stores. And since that time, I've been a full-time consultant, both with Pharmacy Transition Partners and Independent RX Consulting.
Perfect. So, Tim, we heard Mark's side of the story. Let's see if that lines up with you. Tell us who you are. We'll make sure that we got the right pair together here.
I am Tim Clark. I'm a third-generation pharmacist, and I've worked for Mark Bondurant since I was about 14, 15 years old. I used to be his delivery driver, his stock boy. I'd go out and get his Taco Bell, and Mark bought me my first beer in a bar. We've been good friends, and being that we're a family business, even though other people told me not to go to pharmacy school, I went into pharmacy school and became a pharmacist, kind of followed in my dad, Mark's footsteps, if you want to say. And during that time of buying and selling stores and opening stores, you know, with Mark, had the great opportunity of figuring out that I wasn't good at everything. And, you know, Mark and I were really good partners, that he was more organizationally minded and kept things nice and tight. And I was more of the guy who kind of had the dream. We've bought and sold 30 stores for ourselves, but then we've also had the great opportunity of helping other pharmacists do what we've done. And right now we're focusing on helping pharmacists transition their business.
I want you guys to think back to the first time you remember dealing with each other to sell a current pharmacy or to buy another pharmacy. Would you both remember that pretty well? Is it clear in both your heads what decision that was? At that time, you were what, one store or?
We actually had 3 stores, Mike.
What was the first store decision you made as far as number of stores after those 3?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, but I think the first thing was we opened a store from scratch that was kind of in the middle of all 3 of the stores. At that time, prescriptions volume was increasing every year, and we had 3 growing stores. So just like, I don't know if it was smart or not, Mike, but we decided to put a store in between all of them, thinking that this would add convenience to our customer, but also another opportunity. It was in a community that I lived, so I was kind of excited to have a store closer to my house, and we kind of partnered with the local grocer, and we opened up a store inside of a little mom-and-pop grocery store.
Well, I think the first one was it just simply looked like an opportunity. And with that discussion, as you'll notice, with any time you ask us about how a decision was made, Tim is always the aggressive optimist, and I'm always the very cautious one.
The gas and the brake.
Absolutely, yeah. So people ask me, you know, what would it be like if it wasn't for Tim? And I would say, well, then I would have one really good store because that's my cautiousness. It's the next one that's crazy, Mike.
We got the scoop. What was number 5 then?
It was a purchase of an existing store. Looking back on it, it was a great opportunity, and I'm certainly glad that Tim saw that opportunity and was able to take care of it. But all I could see was this is going to be $1 million to buy a store.
Well, it wasn't just $1 million. It was $1.3 million.
Yeah. Well, anything over $1 million didn't matter to me at that point, Tim.
And I don't know, Mike, if we had this great grand plan to go own 10 stores or 20 stores. We had, that wasn't our plan. It was, let's look at deals and opportunities and see what happens. Every transaction creates a little bit more risk, but with every little risk, there's a little bit more opportunity. My only risk that I thought was, well, I could get stuck working the store. For me, I was looking at growing the business so I could have more time off the bench and more time at home. I think Mark and I would say that was actually the step that actually catapulted us to having more stores, because it gave us the cash flow.
And I think that's really interesting, too, because if you look at Tim's primary motivation, at least during that time, for expansion, it wasn't so much to build this empire. It was exactly what he said. It was so that he could be with his family more. And he knew that if we expanded with stores, then other people could help run the business, and he could be home with the family more.
Because you knew if things went south, that one of the first areas that would help you out would be by cutting down a pharmacist, and then you'd be back more, but you'd pick up a quick $100,000 or something like that.
Absolutely, Mike. That's exactly how I thought of it.
Now, when you guys think back to your fourth and fifth store, was there any negative emotion? And if there was, what would that emotion have been?
Each person that you buy a store from, each individual typically, I mean, they're different. You've got the guy who's the one-man band, who's like OCD on everything. Then you've got the one owner who has Sally or Jim or whoever do all of his stuff, and he was kind of floating around, you know, more probably like me, more like a squirrel. So you just didn't know when you were buying somebody what that store was going to be like and what you were replacing. So the thing I think as a young man or young men that we were learning is, every transaction is different, completely different.
What was the worst fallback ever after stores 5, 6, or 7?
To be open, I have to have a pharmacist on staff. And during that period of time was when we had a pharmacist shortage. So, I mean, this was the time where, you know, you're given $20,000 bonuses, you're leasing guys cars for them to go leave to come work for you and take a chance, even though you and I both know working in an independent pharmacy is a lot easier, even back in the 90s, as it is to work for a chain. And what I mean easier is like you have some control and you have some input in terms of what happens, right? But during that period of time, the pharmacist had so much power over me.
The pharmacist had power over you because they knew that you needed them, that you could not physically jump in.
At that time, Mike, it was not uncommon for a pharmacist to get on an average of 2 to 3 calls a day from a recruiter. And so I agree with Tim. That was very stressful during that time, because it was my job to manage all the pharmacists and to get them to do what we needed them to do and to work hard and be incentivized and so forth. But by the same token, I had to do that with great kid gloves, because I really could not afford to upset anybody. It was a difficult time. So if they needed off on the Saturday, Mark could go work for them. If they said, I need to be off at 5 o'clock today because my kid has something, Mark could go out to the store at 5 o'clock and work for them, because I couldn't afford to say no. And that was pretty stressful.
It's kind of like kids, you know, once you have 3 kids, as they say, they kind of have you outnumbered.
Yes, they do.
They know that you can't say, all right, get out of here. Not that you'd want to, but hey, get out of here. You're fired. I'm going to come in and work these next 3 days or whatever, and I don't need you. Not that you'd want to do that. But you can't have 2 people say that at 2 different stores when there's just 1 of you.
Yeah, and we were fortunate. I mean, they certainly had that power, but it was very seldom exercised. In other words, I don't recall people threatening me like, well, if you do this, and I'm like, but on the other hand, it was there, and they certainly knew that. Okay, well, if you don't want to, if I can't be off every Saturday, you know, well, I can go do here, and they'll let me off every Saturday, you know. Or hey, did you guys know that everybody got a 15% raise at Walgreens this year? You know, it was there, and it made it difficult. My management style kind of evolved from that.
A lot of our employees, Mike, were pharmacists that were married, and they worked for a chain, too. So we'd constantly hear what was going on at Walgreens or CVS or Kroger, you know, a different place.
Their spouse was a pharmacist too?
Yeah. So we heard that, and he's right. It wasn't like our pharmacist, you know, tried to, you know, to squeeze us. I'm not trying to say that at all. And I guess that also comes back to your question that you're talking about, you know, the financial risk. You know, the reason those things bothered you was the financial risk of not being open and knowing that you are not going to make any money unless that store is staffed. Or for me or Mark at various points, the risk became, okay, if we didn't handle this, then my life is going to change. I'm going to have to drive, you know, 50 miles to go work in one of the stores or something.
I remember those times well. They didn't have to say it for you to know it. Everybody knew it. You'd pick up a magazine and all of a sudden you'd be working there and the Daily Mail would come in and Drug Topics or something would come in, you know, or the State Association magazine and say, you know, here's the income of the people and stuff. And I think what was most difficult for me during that time was that I came in with my dad being the pharmacist, and it was never really made clear to the rest of the team that I was now their boss or I was the president at the time. And so what I started doing basically is I started managing through motivation. Okay. So I was managing people just by like smiling and trying to motivate them. Your language almost changes.
Well, I think you then would put so much of that burden on yourself, Mike, that, you know, I'm either going to tiptoe around this and I'm going to let this happen, but you're not going to really be an active manager because I really can't, because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. You know, one of the books that we read and we used in our business was that 1 Minute Manager book to try to help us. You know, it's not bad to tell Mary to come in on time. Actually, I can tell you a story that I can remember having a tech who'd come in late all the time. Now, she was really nice. She had family problems. Her dad was abusive. Her mom was an alcoholic. She had all this stuff. But she'd come in 5 minutes, 10 minutes late, and she'd come in, you know, with her two big gulps, you know, and a cup of coffee for you. So you're like, oh, she's so nice.
Yeah.
I'm so, you know.
Right.
But the problem became that everybody that worked with you was like, oh, well, Tim's easy. Tim lets that happen. You know, finally, I kind of realized that, okay, this is probably bad. And I had to sit down with that technician and say, first, I know you work really hard while you're here. I know you got this stuff happening at home, but you're not being fair to your fellow employees. And I had to put down the, you hate to say this to someone, but I had to say, if you do this again, you are saying that you don't respect the people that you work with, and I'm going to have to tell you you can't work here because I can't have those people think that they're not as valuable as you are.
Right. And I think what happens too, it's either in the case of having more stores or in our case, it was me not being around so much, is people almost start to forget where their paycheck's coming. You start having the pharmacist who is the employee pharmacist, but that sort of becomes their leader. And they're almost a team revolved around that person. And you're almost like an outsider, even though you're the one that's, you know, throwing in the money every week.
I think the number one thing you always had to gain with employees during that time, and really, I guess, always, is respect. You know, you can talk about loyalty you'll never win by managing by fear. And to get respect, I mean, you have to earn it. And I think that's why we had a lot of really good people. I think they came to respect our methodology, the way we like to run business. We always tried to do the right thing. We always tried to treat people fairly. And I think that mutual respect is what kept us in business during that time.
I don't disagree with you, Mark. I don't disagree that it was respect. But I think for that respect to come, is they also have to know that you are the guy that could become a real badass if you had to. Even though they may never see it, they know it's there.
I can't control what that person is going to feel when I say something. But I have to be honest to them. Because the one thing that someone will lose their respect for you with, and they'll completely lose your trust, is if you're lying. I mean, you've got to say, this isn't good. And when I say this isn't good, this doesn't mean that you're a big fat liar. Like, and I think there's, you know, that that stage in our development as pharmacists. And, you know, we graduate, we're young professionals, and immediately we're in a management role, but we've never managed anybody, right? So, like, part of the thing that we had to learn ourselves as pharmacists is how to be a manager.
You're exactly right, Tim. And if you're not true to yourself, you're going to take it out on your dog at home, or you're going to take it out on doing something, eating too much or drinking too much or whatever, because instead of putting the process and the discussion where it should be, you've kind of internalized it, and that's not going to be good for anybody.
And it's really not good for the person you work with either.
It's not.
I mean, they may not really want to get better. They may be lazy, you know, but as a person, you come into work, you want to do a good job. And I wish as pharmacists, we are trained more in communication with people that we're managing. We spend so much time talking about the nuts and bolts of a pharmacy and, you know, how does medicine work, the chemistry, the bioavailability, whatever, the stereochemistry, the pharmacokinetics. But we don't talk about how to deal with that angry nurse or that patient, or how to motivate somebody, but also how to discipline somebody with again, everybody has a different personality and how they do it. But not doing it can cripple your business.
Mark and Tim, at some point then, people are coming to you for a little bit of advice here and there. And at some point you say, hey, we can take our advice we're giving, turn it into some consulting, eventually get paid for that. And that's what you did.
We first started Independent Rx Consulting, and that kind of started because we were really good at starting stores and buying stores. And then our newest venture is Pharmacy Transition Partners, where what we've kind of found through our experience is transitioning your business, which can also mean selling it. And selling it can be to a chain, it can be to another independent, it can be to a family member, it can be to an employee, it can be to a hospital. There's all these people that you can transition your business to. The great thing about starting a business or growing a business is it feels so good when you exit a business, even on a retirement. And, you know, Mark's a little bit closer to retirement than I am. Even our own personal transition is hard. You know, as we become this guy who was able to come in and I lead all these people, now I'm just advising people.
How many pharmacies between you two have you sold, closed, whatever? Of your own?
We have sold, I would say, about 25.
That's a ton.
One of them was a flagship store that Tim's grandfather started and that his father ran for many years and that Tim worked in. And also, it's the store that I managed for 15 years. So that was a real personal sale when we sold that one.
Unless you're building a new store right next door with the same hours and everything, I imagine every one of them came with some happiness and also some angst by either you guys or the employees or someone was going to have to go through some change, right?
Well, even a relocation is hard. We've also relocated 10, 12 stores ourselves. I don't know. You know, it was always trying to get that better location, closer to the corner, more visibility.
Oh, you're not even counting that as one of the sales. That's just moving to a different thing.
No. It's like sometimes you're just moving. Like, again, you talk about our flagship. We ended up selling the actual physical building and moving a block away to a bank.
Yeah, any time you have change, it affects the staff. I always say no one likes change except a wet baby, right? So,
yeah. That's true. Yeah, and they also say if you're a business owner, you sleep like a baby. You wake up every half hour and cry.
There you go.
I imagine with 25 sales or transitions out, would it be fair to say any of those were to get rid of negative gains, like you decided that it wasn't the right neighborhood or the right place to have a pharmacy? What percentage would you give to those 25 as far as nice, happy sales and some that were like, let's just get out of here for whatever the reason?
Well, we had a couple stores, I would say, two or three that we'd started and didn't go as well as we thought. And we needed to exit. But again, you know, that's a decision that you have to make because at some point that becomes obvious that that's not going to be a good store for you and it's time to exit. But and most of the stores were sold in lots, so we sold a lot of them at one time. So it wasn't an individual time of being happy or sad. It was both. You know, and that's the thing you have to realize as an owner is that you work in most cases you work all your life, and especially a single store owner, and you got one chance to sell that store. You know, and so that's a major, major event in your life. And so you ask, oh, is it happy or is it sad? Well, you've worked all your life, in some cases, for that moment, and you do get a nice financial windfall from it. And in that sense, it's very happy. But by the same token, it's absolutely gut-wrenching to know that you won't see those patients that you've got really close to, or that it upset some of the staff that they didn't see it coming, or they didn't know it was going to come, or they felt like that. In some cases, they felt like you'd betrayed their trust, and boy, to have that feeling was really difficult, and still is really difficult. You do have to do what's best for your family, and it is a business. And so, yes, there's a lot of angst that goes with that, but you also have to be bold and make the best decision that's right for you. You did take the financial risk to build it, and it is a business, and you've got every right to sell it.
And for me, Mike, I would say that I don't think there's one transaction where we sold a store that I can tell you that at the end I felt happy. You know, anytime that the hope is gone, you kind of feel bad. So I think as let's say an individual owner, or let's say you own two or three stores, I don't care, 50 stores, and I've had friends who have sold 100 stores. I don't know any of them, unless you were so disconnected, that can say that, oh, well, I felt really good. Now I can say that I felt good that the transaction went well, that there wasn't big stumbles, but there's always a little bit of disappointment in a transaction when you're selling.
But by the same token, I would sit here today and tell you how amazingly blessed I was and still am today by the sale of those stores. So, yes, it jerks your heart out, but it would also be wrong to say that there's not a lot of a good that comes from it, too.
Let's say you need to sell or I want to sell. Those are all different situations, right? You know, Mark's right. I mean, we did well, you know, in our business owning multiple stores. That benefit is really to your family, you know, that you get to retire, you get to do things, or you get to invest in different things. There's a great opportunity that you get, but all of it comes down to, I think, you know, we were talking about earlier, all these things require that you are going to change. There's going to be a change. For me, I'm the guy who I want to control as much of the change as I can. I don't want you to go come in tomorrow and quit, or you tell me that you're going to pull my line of credit. I want to tell you I want to exit this, if that makes sense. Like, I want to have that kind of freedom.
Back on the family part, you always have to do what's best for your family. And here's why, I think. To someone else, it could sound selfish. But the thing is, I've always been amazed how somebody can come into me and tell me that they're going to put in their 2-week notice. And I've got to be, I try to be truthful. And I'm like, okay, you know, I try not to show much emotion. And sometimes I would be pissed, but I would pretend like I was happy. And now it's like, I don't pretend. I just basically, you know, kind of emotionless, just proper. But the owners are supposed to do that for the employees. But the employees, if you were just to say to them, you know what? You're about 49% good, about 51% bad. I think I'm going to play the odds on this one. I'm going to get rid of you and put out a want ad. And so you're done. And you're the monster for that, while they can come in and you got to pretend like you're happy for them moving on. And here's another one. Customers. Like, you feel bad about doing something for a customer. Like, they're gonna miss this or that. Well, then, like, the one customer you were thinking of, they come in, like, the next week and they say, I've got to move all my prescriptions somewhere else because my copay is 50 cents cheaper at that place. You know, something like that. So, it's just, the balance is not there. And so, if anybody's listening to this that is thinking about that, you always got to go with what's best for your family, because nobody has put as much thought and the blood, sweat, and tears into it as you has. And frankly, nobody cares that much.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I think those decisions that always came down. I mean, I've got, you know, a family to protect and take care of, and it's your job as a business owner to try to make a good decision. So that may require that other people's lives change because of your decision, but ultimately, I mean, that's why you're a leader. That's why you're the owner. I mean, you have to make that decision, and you shouldn't be captive to other people's feelings for that decision. Now, if you were a jerk about it, I mean, that's a totally different thing. I mean, you know, you've got to do that just like that employee you talk about who gave you their 2 weeks notice. I mean, you don't have to be smiling and be all thankful and all, you know, like, because you are disappointed. You know, this is your lead tech who just gave your 2 weeks notice. I had no idea that you were going to go take this hospital job or whatever. So, I mean, it's hard emotionally to know what to do. All I can say is, like, in all those things, be professional. Be professional. Be professional. Be kind. Always go into the thing of being kind. And kindness doesn't mean that I've got to go give you a $10,000 parting gift. It means that I treat you with respect. But you should do that as an owner or a manager all the way through your business career. Because, and as you know, our pharmacy business is kind of like I'll call it a fraternity family, right? You're like, I don't know, we're not 6 degrees removed. I mean, we're so close to that. I don't want to piss Mike or Mark off because they know Bob or Sally or Sam or Saeed. I mean, like, everybody kind of knows each other through somebody. So you need to do that. And maybe that's good about our business, because you are held accountable. You know, someone who's not that good of a person, you know, maybe they really shouldn't do that well.
Well, on that point, too, is that the employees that don't understand how small the world is sometimes are not making the best choices, because it's like, you know, it's a small world here, you know, as far as how that person left and things like that.
And I do have a lot of sympathy for when there is a sale for the staff, because, you know, that along with respect comes loyalty, and we always try to go both ways. And I can see from their perspective, you come in today and you tell me you sold the store next week and you didn't tell me, and now everything is going to change and I've got to go work for a chain or find a new job. And I know that must just be terrible. I know that. It would yank your heart out knowing, because I feel that. But by the same token, you know, it's for the same reasons that we just talked about. You got to do what's best for your family. And likewise, when people came to me and said, I'm leaving or I'm taking a different job, I always tried to keep that in mind. You're doing, and a line that I frequently would tell my pharmacist is this: I know you've always been very careful and thoughtful in your decision making, and I may not understand it, but I certainly respect that it must be a good decision for you and your family. So best of luck, and if I can help you in any way, I will. And that's all you can do.
And that's what it should be. It should just be fair. The problem is, the whole world thinks that the companies are terrible for this, when in fact people get to come in and, you know, employees get to come in and do that, and customers get to leave too. It's just not fair. I don't know. It just seems like we're put to a higher standard on that.
Well, you are. It's like, it's as simple as anything. If you're a leader, you're going to be held to a different standard. You know, you're an owner. You're a small business owner. You're held to a different standard. Welcome to entrepreneurship.
With this 2017 DIR dive, I'm thinking that there's pharmacies that are doing stuff that I've always kind of feared. Like, what would that look like when you've always run something successful and it turns on you? I think that maybe one of the best things that someone could have would be, you don't want to stick around in a bad situation, but it seems like time would be something that would be something valuable, to have some time. It just seems like there's angst for people that think that their world turns around upside down overnight, and they go from, okay, I'm here with my family, I get a few afternoons off a week and this and that, and I've gone down to now I'm homeless, my family's broken apart, and we've all been shipped out to different homeless centers, and my kids are in the, you know, orphan. You know what I mean? It's like people's mind goes from top to bottom, and you think this happens in 12 hours, but it probably doesn't. And how do companies... I know you guys don't focus on this, and it's a very negative thing to focus on, but do they pull your store away overnight? I know that doesn't happen, but people just think that in their head.
I think what buys you time is knowledge, in the sense that the more you understand your business and have the data that you can see and you can forecast and make that decision 3 and 6 months, 12 months down ahead of time instead of waiting till it's too late, you know, that's what buys you time. So understanding your important metrics and the story they're telling you. To do a little plug for Independent RX Consulting, I mean, that's one of the things that I think we do well, is that we give a full dashboard where you can see that that's going to happen, and you could predict, you know, when you're going to run into trouble. And that at least does buy you that time. Now, and the people that really run into problems are people that lose track of their fundamentals. And it seems so simplistic to say, you know, that when your sales go down or when your profits go down, the first thing you got to look at is your payroll. But it's true. It's a fundamental. And where we see so many failures with people is that when the DIR dive hit or when the reimbursement numbers go down, but we look at their payroll and it's never changed. In fact, it's increased. Or their purchasing habit. They don't go back and try to renegotiate anything, nor do they watch their inventory. So really, those two fundamentals are the things that you first have to look at. Now, that's simplistic. And yeah, it's not always just that. There's a lot more to it. But that's what buys you time.
I can remember when I had, a few stores, and I was the one who signed the paychecks. So I felt like I had some control. I saw that every week. Now we've gotten things so automated that, you know, I don't really even see the time clock. They submit it to this online payroll processor, and then I'm kind of historically looking at things instead of proactively. You know, used to be in the pharmacy, we'd have our schedule up, and you'd go look at it to see, oh, you're supposed to work 40 hours, and I've got it. You've got an hour and a half of overtime. I could go see that so easily when I was the manager. But now with the technology, we've kind of lost, you know, basic common sense where we don't know what we spend on what we spend. So like if again, whether it's your wholesale bill or your payroll bill, if you don't understand what I spent, you're kind of running blind. And if you want to get more time, you know, one of the things you should do is today you should look at, you know, for instance, the payroll. We should look at that today and say, okay, what is my payroll? How do I compare to other people? And then I have to go look at what is the chain doing down the street? And I know we as independents, we don't want to be the chain going down the street. But if we want to get time, the best thing we can do is be better stewards of the money that we have now. And it's, you talk about doing it for your family, like making that decision to finally sell. Why don't we use that same decision when we're deciding whether, you know, we need 150 hours of tech time or 110? You know, we don't think about it that way. But if you think about it maybe that personally, maybe then, you know, we'll get more time before we see these things hitting.
Here's where I think the problem is. That DIR thing happened so fast and so deep cutting. You would have to cut your payroll in half almost, but then do the same amount of work or, you know, more work. And then you're looking at the things that we talked about not wanting to get back on the bench.
Yeah, when DIRs first hit, I remember that very vividly. We sat down as a team and made a list of everything that we could possibly cut as soon as we found out about DIRs and saw what the impact was going to be. And it was things like discontinuing our 401k, cutting back any pharmacist overlap that we had in any of our stores, even when they were busy. Some of it involved me working a little bit extra bench. We had a pharmacist that was kind of a project person. We lost that person. We looked at our payroll and as far as technicians and cut that. And it was a whole host of anything that we could possibly cut, even if it was a few hundred dollars here and there, you know, we did. And that was a difficult time because, and another thing I learned there, Mike, was, you know, I would say I made a mistake perhaps with our pharmacist at that time because I thought being honest and transparent was the right thing to do. And I showed them, here's how much we're down. All we're trying to do is stay even. Don't you think for a second that there's another dollar going in Tim or I's pocket because it's not the case. And I'll show you the, and I showed them the exact numbers. But what I learned from that is that what that made was the team also lost hope. You know, that they also thought, well, then why, you know, it just really hurt morale. And if I had to do that over again, I would have still made the cuts. I would have still looked ahead and done all the things that we did, but I wouldn't have made it their problem.
That bit me right square in the ass on that one, just what you're saying. When these DIRs hit us, I had pulled in my 3 liters and they knew things were going down. I mean, you could see stuff happening with the reimbursement and stuff, but I tried to let them know, hey, here's what we're going to try to do. I'm going to try to do this, try to do that. And unfortunately, 2 of them got cold feet. They left. When they left, morale went down because I was there, more. Now, that's not as bad as it sounds. It didn't go bad just because I was there. It went bad because they weren't as used to me as much because I was at home more. So I was like a new face there for them more. But I lost like half of my staff. I fired some. Half of my staff pretty much was gone. In the end, it worked out perfectly because they quit and they moved on. I didn't have to fire them, but I would have had to have fired them by now.
If I could turn back the clock and handle it again, I still would have made the cuts. But what I would have told people is, you've always trusted Tim and I to make a good decision. And I hope you can understand that these are necessary decisions. And so you're just going to have to trust me that while it seems like that we're cutting things, for us to keep our boat going together, you're going to have to trust us that this is what we need to do. And I would have left it at that. I wouldn't have showed them the numbers.
Tim, you talk about what the chain's doing down the road. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but maybe what the industry is doing. But some of the chains handle that by taking a 40-hour person and cutting them down, right, to like 32. They're not just firing them, right?
Oh, yeah. They cut them down to 30 hours so they get the benefits away, too.
Oh.
I think you're right. You know, one of the mistakes that I think it sounds like you make the same mistake, Mike, as an owner, is we try to bring them up to our same level, like as we're making this decision, so that they can be, I don't know if we're looking for empathy or a pat on the back or,
right.
Oh, I understand where you're going through, Mark.
Yes.
You know, like, I don't know
exactly
what we're looking for. But the reality is that's not what they're going through. I mean, that person who was at 20 hours going to 16 is impacted by that decision. But all you can do, I think, I think we're kind of all saying the same thing. You really just have to be honest with them. Hey, here's what's going on. We're making less money. We've got to make some changes so that we have. You know, first off is we want to take care of as many people as we can. And, you know, we want to have, let's say, our benefits. And we want to have the service that our customers expect. But things are going to have to change because our reimbursement is changing or the industry, whatever you had to tell them. But our problem was probably giving too much information when they really didn't. It wasn't even that they didn't trust us. They just didn't know. I mean, they had no clue of, you know, that what why does that Caremark check or, you know, check from, you know, look 10% smaller? Well, it's because there's a DIR fee in it this week. You know, they didn't know that stuff.
And they don't really need to know all that. I'm not even sure if I should have shared anything until I had to make the cuts.
I agree. I think, you know, probably would have been best to just wait till you had more of a solid plan.
When I think about our time that I had to deal with mainly last year, I guess it was a couple of things. One is I didn't really feel like firing people. And 2 is I didn't feel like working harder. In the meantime, I was chewing through money. And the part-time people, on them, they were used to going up or down because they tell me, hey, I can only work 13 hours this week because I've got class. And this week it's 25. So those, they were no problem. Let's say you had 10 full-timers somewhere across your business. And let's say you had to come down 75%. Would you have tried to get rid of 2 full-timers? Would you have cut everybody down 25%. How would you handle that if you were dealing with full-timers?
Well, I think depending upon your size of your company, you know, maybe it doesn't matter the size of your company. I think to me, it would be to limit the impact to as few people as I could. And what I find, and I think Mark can agree with this, is as you're looking at that, the best thing you can do is talk to a friend who's not in pharmacy. The perspective of pharmacy has us sometimes so twisted into listening what everybody else is doing. It can make you sometimes just miss the complete obvious. I think Mark and I can probably share the same experience that some of our best thinking was outside of pharmacy.
I think, Mike, when it comes to payroll, you got to make a decision forward and not backwards. What I mean by that is this. You start that decision by saying, here's how much I have to spend. I got $3,000 a week to spend. As opposed to thinking, well, do I cut Mary? Do I cut Sally? Do I cut these hours or whatever? You start the decision with, that's all I got. And then from there you craft, okay, what do I have to have? What, you know, what's the minimum I can have? And you build it up from there, because so many people start that backwards. Well, I'll cut this person, or this person doesn't need the job as bad as that person, or even on normal times when we're not talking about a ship sinking, we're just talking about normal times. People make their payroll decision by saying, well, how many prescriptions an hour should my technicians fill? Well, that's not the question. The question is, how much money do I have to spend on payroll? That's where you start the decision.
So instead of thinking what you have, even though you've got full-time people going, you say, what can I spend? Who do I need for that? And then you make the cuts accordingly as soon as next week.
You have to make the decisions based on that, because if you don't, then the ultimate thing is you're out of business. You know, if you were at a cash-only restaurant and you could buy a hamburger for $15 or a steak for $35 and you only had $15, what are you going to get? It's not like, well, I kind of like the steak, you know. Well, you don't have it. So you have to say, you know, this is what I got, and I've got to make this work, because if I don't make it work, then you need to come talk to Pharmacy Transition Partners, because if you can't make that work, you're going to go down.
Finally, when you look at all the skills that are needed, when you finally get to a decision where you say, boy, it's 50-50 between letting 2 out of 8 go or keeping 10 at whatever that would be. Finally, you might need to make that decision. But the first two are based on money, skills, what's good for your family, on and on. And at the end, it probably won't be all things even. At the end, you might have to make that decision of whether it hurt a few or hurt many. But that's not your first decision. That's way down the line.
And everybody can and will disagree with your decision.
And the first decision exactly is, how much can I afford? And you have to have resolve to make that decision. Because if you don't, you know, you may think you're a good guy by protecting everybody's job, but what you're really doing is saying in a few months, no one will have a job. So as hard as that is, and as hard as it is to say, well, okay, now we're working with half as many people and doing twice as much work, if that's your only alternative, then you have to make that happen. I've had this discussion with countless owners that I'll tell them, this is what you got to spend, and they'll say, it's impossible. I can't do that. And I'll say, well, here's what the numbers tell you. If you don't do that, then you won't have a business. So you have to make it possible. You got to look for ways to be more efficient. Maybe you've got someone that has a skill, but they also do some things that other people can do. And you got to reassign that and say, well, let's get a cheaper person to do this, this, and this for you, or reassign that so that you can go do bigger jobs for me, because I need to rethink this now. So you got to look for efficiencies. You got to look for different job assignments. But the bottom line is, you have to make it work under the number you have.
If someone couldn't pull the trigger, and if they said, I just can't do this, and you say, hey, fine, don't do it. But in 3 months, nobody's going to have a job. And they say, well, what do I do? Have you guys ever gone in there and pulled the trigger?
I've never gone into a store personally, but I think on several occasions, I've had people say, you know, my consultant tells me I have no choice and puts it all on me.
Yeah.
I would encourage them to. Sorry, you got to deflect some of this. Now, the first person to blame, it's best to be truthful about it, right? And if the advice you've been given, I think for us, sometimes it's a bank. You know, I got to do this because I'm not within the covenants of a bank. Deflecting it is a natural way to feel okay about it. It doesn't mean that you're changing the decision or that you're being dishonest about it. It allows you in some ways to have the freedom to say, hey, I've looked at this a lot of different ways. I even had a consultant come in and give me some advice, and this is what we're going to do.
I mean, Mike, look how much easier it would be for you to come to one of our stores and look at our financials and look at our workflow, and how easy it would be for you to say, well, you could cut this, you could do that different. That's so much easier than an owner sitting in their own store making those decisions that he knows these people personally and affects their lives. So yeah, it's a great use of a consultant to say, just tell me what I have to do, and say, well, they told me that I had to do it. That's okay.
All right, so here's a problem that I've got now. Back 10 years ago, I fired a couple guys. I hit a certain negative mark in my bank account, and I always said, if I hit that, I'm going to get rid of these guys, and I got rid of them. It was great to be able to have something to blame it on. But now I realize I was in the same position a year ago, and I realize it all comes back down to me being lazy and not wanting to fill in for them. Because the first time, back in 2011, I didn't have to fill in for them because we cut some hours. I kept enough staff on part-time and so on. It all comes down to me not wanting to work hard in the pharmacy. I just realized that. I'm not a chicken. I'm just lazy.
That's the power of wealth. I mean, like, that you can make decisions for yourself. But we become so handcuffed by those decisions because we don't want to hurt other people's feelings. We don't want to impact, let's say, even our family. I don't want to tell my wife, oh, I'm sorry, honey, you can't spend $2,000 on groceries this month. Everybody has to figure out a way to be kind to each other, but we also have to be honest. You know, if I only have $3,000 to spend, you know, that can also impact you and your family. And I'm sure it did, Mike. Like, as you were making those decisions, like, the cash flow that came back to the owner was also impacted.
I'm not sure. I think that's just what put me in more debt.
I mean, if the money's not coming in, you end up going into debt. That's true.
Tim, you've got 8 kids. I've got 10. And so I always have 7 at home, and sometimes I have 10. And I don't know, I could make them. God knows I'm not wasting away. I could probably eat less and save some money there, but I don't know. The thing about pharmacy, here's I think what happened is, it happened so fast. It happened in reverse. The DIRs came up almost behind you. Nobody wants to go out and find a new pharmacy job. They might not want to work a lot in their own pharmacy, but God knows they don't want to work too much in someone else's pharmacy.
One of the things, I guess, a closing thing I'd like to stress is that if you feel you're on the Titanic, then at least know where your lifeboat might be. In other words, reach out and educate yourself on what your option might be. And so many owners don't have any idea what their store might be worth or how to do it, and it gets too late, and then it's a fire sale. So, you know, when you're first seeing, hey, I might have some problems, even if it's not even in your mind, maybe I have to sell my store, at least learn about your option. Reach out and say, hey, if this would go this way, guys, where am I at? What should I do? So I think that's something that people need to keep in mind.
There's COVID, there's the DIR fees or all that, but look at the positives of getting to know people like you, telling our listeners that there are people out there that understand that with one phone call, you guys can get on and really help people see where they are and where they're going and so on. And so there's good and bads, but ultimately everything's good.
Yeah, no, I think that's where we've got to feel professionally. I mean, look at this COVID. It could be a huge negative, but what happened? I mean, we got the Supreme Court case of Rutledge in our favor. The whole immunization of this vaccine is going to come down to community pharmacists to deploy it in our communities. I think we're going to see ourselves transforming our place as leaders in community healthcare. So we actually, you know, this has been a bad year for all of us, but change creates opportunity, and opportunity creates discussion, and discussion creates new thoughts, and new thoughts create new business and new opportunities. And sometimes they're the end of a career, sometimes they're a beginning of a career. So it's not so bad.
You bring up the Rutledge, but there's a chance that doesn't pass if COVID wasn't there. I mean, because these judges are humans and they've heard of pharmacists on the front line. They're not in a bubble.
That 8-0 decision, I don't think we would have gotten that. I agree.
It's certainly one of the more difficult times of pharmacy. But by the same token, Mike, I go back to this. You know, if I turn back the clock to back when Tim was taking out my trash and I would go to... And I would go to the community pharmacist meetings, and inevitably there'd be these grumpy old men. I called them grumpy old farts that sat in the back of the room. And they would tell me, this is 1980, you know, I don't understand why you're in pharmacy, son. You know, it used to be a good thing, and now it's just terrible. We got, you know, insurance companies are starting to come in, and chains. There used to not be any chains around here. I ran my store for years and I didn't have any chains.
That is exactly what I was told, why not to go to pharmacy school, if you remember.
Yeah. So I heard it then, you know, and then mail order comes along. Well, that's going to be the thing that we're never going to survive mail order. We're never going to survive $4 prescriptions. We're never going to survive this and that. And so, yeah, it's tough. But, you know, I guess I've heard it for 40 years. And the bottom line is this. People need what we're selling, and it's not prescriptions, it's relationships. They can get prescriptions through the mail. That's true. Or some computer robot can spit it out and you can go put your card in and probably get that. But what they need the relationships that community pharmacies offer. And so it's not like we're selling typewriters. We're not selling something that people don't need. So there's where I get my hope that somehow or other, this reimbursement model will come around in time because people will understand this is something that our society needs.
Yeah, and COVID has proven that not only do they need relationships, but unlike maybe waiting for tennis shoes to show up from Zappos or waiting for something to come from Amazon, they need relationships, you know, when they're crying on the phone or whatever. They need them like in 30 seconds.
They need action, yeah.
They need action and they need someone to talk to. Guys, thank you so much. What a pleasure talking to you both. Last time I got stuck with just the young bucks, but now
I... And now you're getting comforting and grandfatherly.
Yeah, you get the grizzled veterans now. Thank you very much, Mike, for having us on. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And I really enjoy your podcast and what you do for the pharmacy community.
Oh, thank you. It's really rewarding. All right, very good, guys. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye, Mike.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.